Top 10 movies this week at 10. Whacked.
Wart, I think we decided, didn't we? Vart. No, Vart.
Vart.
You know, I enjoyed it enormously. I know that the people on the Asian network say that it's not a masterpiece, but I really thought it was funny, and it was definitely, you know, cross-culturally entertaining. It had good jokes, and it had great singing and dancing, and I wanted to play that tune from it last week, which never got around to, so go and see the movie, because it has got this wonderful sequence, Let's Play Holly, which they throw in all this colourful stuff around, and I enjoyed it a lot.
Be Cool at 9.
Boring, dreary, why do it? You know, the first one was fine, second one waited an awfully long time to get there, and, you know, and it's not worth the wait, and there is something rather depressing. I don't know what it is with John Travolta. Never has another act had such an up-and-down career. I mean, he keeps having comebacks, but in order to have comebacks, he has to have go-aways. And to me, this was a go-away rather than a comeback.
Robots at 8.
I liked it. I liked the design. I like, as I think I said before,
colours.
The pastel shirt. Yeah, but it is, because it's 50s retro colouring. And, you know, it's an animation piece, and the animation is really lovely, and it's very well done. It's just not as great a script as perhaps it could have been.
Hitch at 7.
Funny, up to a point. It's a water cooler movie. It's got Will Smith, who I think is actually in his element here, doing sort of fast, snappy, quick-talking romantic comedy, and he's very good. It's a pretty vacuous thing, but it's made millions, and it's easy to see why.
Valiant at 6.
Not as good as Robots, and I'm surprised that it's ahead of Robots in the charts. You know, it's homegrown product. Again, loads and loads of good voice talent, Ricky Gervais, Ewan McGregor, who, of course, is also in Robots. But I just didn't think it hung together as well as it should do. Quite nice design, though. It looked quite nice.
Sahara at 5?
I did finally go and see it, and I wish I hadn't.
Guess Who at 4?
Funnily enough, we only did, like, 3 seconds on this last week, but I know the idea of Guess Who's Coming to Dinner, role reversed, with Ashton Kutcher, who I think we established is known to most people as Demi Moore's other half. This little kind of perky guy who apparently is big on MTV, like I would know about MTV, I don't know. So anyway, the deal is it's Guess Who's Coming to Dinner, role reverse. So he's the white guy who's going out with an African-American woman, he's taken home, and Bernie Mac's the dad, and he's the one who's outcast. And actually, although it sounds like it ought to be really excruciatingly abominable, it's not as rubbish as it could be. I mean, it is rubbish, but it's perfectly passable rubbish. And certainly, up against last week's big howlers like The Wedding Date, it was Citizen Kane.
Not as rubbish as it could be. Not the greatest thing to put on a poster, is it?
Well, you know, I don't know whether it's had any acclaim better than that. I mean, presumably somewhere in the world there's a film critic who said it's the funniest thing he's ever seen, but there always is.
The Wedding Date at 3?
You know, I mean, dig the deepest, darkest pit you can possibly find, bury the negatives in it, and prevent anyone involved from ever working in the movie industry again. It's just a just unbelievably horrible film.
The Amityville Horror at 2.
Why on earth bother to remake The Amityville Horror, which was pretty ropey the first time round, but at least the first time round had some sort of subtextual significance, because it was actually about people worrying about all their savings going down a money pit. Now remade under producer Michael Bay, who already has on his conscience the remake of the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, which was clearly an evil and bad thing to have done. Directed by a British director who had done some interesting work in the past. This is all style, no substance, and, you know, fairly dull.
And the UK's number one movie is still The Interpreter.
You know, it's interesting how well The Interpreter's done, considering what a kicking it got given by some mainstream critics, also included in that. It's not a great movie, but what it is a vacuous, stylish, good-looking, show-off, talented actors and a famous director saying, let's do highbrow, but in fact doing lowbrow exploitation. It's perfectly fine. It's perfectly fine. I wish it wasn't quite so full of itself. And I wish the fact that it's the first movie to be shot within the corridors of the United Nations and Kofi Annan had to personally authorize it, I wish that wasn't so big of a deal. But it is. That is why the movie has kind of attracted the attention that it has. And it's fine, but it is overdone and overcooked.
That's the box office top 10. What can you tell us about anything that's half decent?
I have 1 minute, so let's do Clifford, okay? Because I'm going to be very quick about this. Basically,
now, this I'm hoping is going to be the movie of the week.
I want to read you this, okay?
Clifford the Big Red Dog is a wonderful. It's a 60-foot red hound.
Yeah, and the reason he's a 60-foot red hound, if you're not up to speed with the TV series, is that basically Emily loved Clifford, and she loved him so much that Clifford started to grow. This is all in the backstory of the TV series. If you have young kids, you'd know this anyway. Clifford then got so big that Emily's family actually had to leave home. So already Clifford has made them homeless, and they have to move out to the country, but that in case that's a good thing. It's all in the song. Clifford needed Emily. Da, da, da. Anyway, it's very nice. And so the deal is here. Yeah, don't look at me like you don't know that song. You may not know who Ron Jeremy is, but you know who Clifford the Big Red Dog is. Like, so don't give me that look.
The idea rendition.
The idea that people tune in at this time to hear you sing, of course, is completely misplaced. But anyway, carry on.
Okay, fine. So in this movie, Clifford basically goes off to join a travelling circus carnival thing because he's worried that he's costing the family too much in dog food expenses. And he has some adventures. I want to read you this because this is from somebody's written onto the Internet Movie Database, a very concerned thing, which entirely chimes with what you were saying, that your problem was that kids no longer have movies with no peril. This is their summation of it, and I think this is very fair. This is from a guy called Raymond in Chapel Hill in North Carolina. This is a film that contains no bad guys, no raunchy kiddie-fair toilet humour, no violence, and finally no situation of trouble that is anywhere to be found, which makes this a breath of fresh air. Of course, some of the characters, human or canine, do unkind things, but there are only a few moments of worry, and they disappear very quickly. Oh, that is actually, I think, a perfect summation of the film. Obviously, you're not going to go see it for incredible style zip-zang-boom animation, but it's nice and gentle and sweet and harmless and a little bit dull, but you know, not in a bad way. I mean, I like the Clifford TV series. I can't see myself crossing the road for the movie, having, you know, it's fine, it's 74 minutes, it came, it went, but I was thinking all the way through of you that there is no situation of even mild peril.
But though rather disconcertingly, some people do unpleasant things.
Well, they're not that unpleasant.
Well, how unpleasant?
No, I know, it's exactly like the thing, why do you have to have monsters in Harry Potter? Because otherwise nothing happens.
Well, people can do nice things.
Well, they do generally do nice things.
Well, what
things.
Nasty things happen to people?
Somebody is borderline crook. No, it's not even borderline crook. Things happen in order to make the plot. Go see the film, okay? I guarantee, I will make you a bet now. Shake my hand. I make you a bet of a fiver that there is nothing that you would find even mildly perilous.
It's not a question of me, it's a question of the five-year-old, you know. Jonathan asks, is Clifford in the original American or English accent?
It's John Ritter.
So that would be American,
yeah.
Then. I'm not sure if Jonathan's going to be a fan of that, but anyway, that's Jonathan Bird's question.
And okay,
so if you've seen Clifford the Big Red Dog, let us know if there is anything that's slightly nasty, because it does help to be.
No, there's not slightly. What do you mean if you've seen? I sat through the wretched thing. Why don't you trust me?
Experience, dear
okay,
boy.
Okay, fine. I forgot. There's a scene in which he's disemboweled with a chainsaw. It just slipped my mind. Sorry.
The nunchucker.
Sorry, should have said.
That's in there.
Is there no exorcist scene in it?
Yeah, there's that as well. Yeah. And then there's the whole burning at the stake thing. Sorry, yeah. As you were.
I knew if I probed long enough, we'd get there. Other movies to come. 5 Live at 3:32.
Live news, live sport.
This is BBC Radio 5 Live.
5 Live News, I'm Dahlia Raphael. The High Court has accepted an offer from David and Victoria Beckham's former nanny not to make further newspaper allegations about their marriage until a full hearing before a judge. Abby Gibson sold her story to the News of the World for £125,000. Head teachers say violent attacks by pupils' parents on school staff are increasing. At the start of their union's annual conference today, they urged police and local authorities to take the strongest possible action against abusive parents. The government says it's considering new measures in response to complaints that some GP surgeries won't set appointments more than 2 days in advance. The Conservative said Tony Blair didn't realise what impact his government's political targets were having on the NHS. Detectives investigating the stabbing of Abigail Wichels are planning to stage a video identity parade at a hospital bedside. Magistrates have given police more time to question a 25-year-old man about the attack. And the Department of Health has released figures showing a sharp rise in obesity in children under 10. The number of children in England classed as obese went up by 4% in the 8 years to 2003. It's 3:33. Let's go to sport. Here's David.
And Everton will be heartened by UEFA's admission that the Champions League won't be damaged if Liverpool win the trophy but aren't able to defend it next season. The FA, though, will have the final say as to whether Liverpool, if they do win the trophy, are allowed to defend it. Meanwhile, Xabi Alonso's yellow card in the first leg of the Champions League semi-final is still annoying Rafael Benitez. Liverpool can't appeal against the booking, but Benitez believes the club should be able to use video evidence to help them overturn decisions like this.
If you can use the video, for example, for clear situations, then why not? Because you spend, or you are trying to win trophies and a lot of money. and you are talking about the future of a lot of people. And for me, it's, if you have the possibility of seeing a video, a clear situation, then you can change and you can apply, why not?
Rio Ferdinand has urged patience from Sir Alex Ferguson after the Manchester United boss repeated his advice for the defender to hurry up and sign his new contract. Ferdinand's reputed to want around £120,000 a week, and he's told Five Live today it will get signed in time, but the delays haven't been down to him.
We're in negotiations, which are going well. My agent's out of the country at the moment, which is slowing it down a touch. But as I said, we met last week, and things were going reasonably well, and hopefully they'll be able to be speeded up in the coming days. But as I said, I'm happy here before. I've reiterated that I like it here at United and I want to sign, but these things never happen overnight. People have to understand that contract talks and negotiations never happen overnight, and they never happen in 1 or 2 days. They take their time, and this is just one of them situations.
Arsene Wenger has admitted that Thierry Henry has just a 30% chance of facing Manchester United in the FA Cup final. The French striker hoping to return to training next week. Better news of Freddie Ljungberg, who Wenger says has a 50-50 chance of playing in Cardiff. Well, we've seen one comeback in the semi-finals of the World Snooker Championship already today, when Sean Murphy went from 6-2 down against Peter Ebdon to lead 9-7. But Philip Studd, Matthew Stevens now at the table. Could we witness another, do you think?
Yeah, he certainly needs something similar, doesn't he, David? He was blown off the table by Ian McCulloch last night. McCulloch playing the best snooker of his career by far as a qualifier here at the Crucible. Well, today the former runner-up has come out fighting, a 62 break enough for the opener. Another half century made it 6-4, but the qualifier has just responded again with a 70, so he now leads 7-4, though Stevens is looking good in the frame in progress. 17 needed to win.
In the County Cricket Championship, Andrew Flintoff looked good for a while. Some valuable time for him at the crease today, but how are Lancashire Kevin Howells coping now he's out?
Well, not doing so well, really. They're 303 for 7, which is a lead over Worcestershire of 193 runs. The not-out batsman Dominic Cork on 15, Sajid Mahmood on 12. Andrew Flintoff, very entertaining, took a long time to get going, but eventually out. The occasional bowler Stephen Moore, actually, caught by the wicketkeeper James Pipe for 83, 10 fours, 4 sixes, put on 139 with Stuart Law, who has since gone 6th wicket down, again caught behind off the bowling of Matt Mason, again for 83 runs, just like Flintoff. So an interesting game developing here at New Road. Other second division matches, Essex 391 for 7 at Taunton, 201 in front. Derbyshire 5 for none following on, 205 behind Northants. Johan Lowe taking 6 wickets.
In Division 1, Ian Bell's monster innings has come to a close now, Kevin, as has Warwickshire's first innings.
Yes, it has. All out, 430 for the champions. Ian Bell run out for 231, a second double century of Bell's career. Middlesex 23 for none, still 109 runs behind. Glamorgan 104 for 7, they lead Surrey by only 106, 5 wickets to Jimmy Ormond. Gloucestershire 89 for 3, Kent having made 359, and Notts 296 for 3, century to Jason Gallion, who's still there, and Stephen Fleming, Sussex, made 379.
And finally, the feature race at Punchestown today was the champion hurdle and victory for Tony McCoy aboard Brave Inca.
David, thank you. It's 3:37, Five Live. This from Paul in Bristol. Saw Hitchhikers last night. Pleasantly surprised. I'm a fan of the original Total Anorak. Have the DVD and so on. Thought I'd hate it, but when you actually give it a chance, it's pretty good. Consider the time restraints and the amount of detail in the book, and it was done very well. I'm sure devout fans will think it's awful, but I didn't think it was a great attempt at a very difficult project. Andy and Lee says, I saw the film on Monday at Manchester. Thank you for the free ticket. As a big fan of Douglas Adams, I was really disappointed with the film. Most of the best lines in the book were not used, but to my amazement, everyone else in the cinema was laughing out loud every minute or so. So what do I do now? Dave in Hammersmith. I haven't heard the original radio series, nor have I read the books, but I did watch and enjoy the TV series very much. I have the DVD, therefore that is my point of reference for the material. The cast are all very engaging in the movie, visually the film is wonderful. It's still grated in places where familiar scenes were given a different slant, but that's not the fault of the film. It's my emotional attachment to the version I know so well. In a time of high-concept money generators and by-the-numbers sequels, this film is an enjoyable breath of fresh air. Mark Kermode, you think what?
Well, should we have a clip first, just to kind of set this up? Because we've talked about Hitchhikers for such a long time. I think we should hear a little bit of it. This is a clip. One of the best things about it is that they've got two great voice artists working on it. They've got Alan Rickman, who does the voice of Marvin the Paranoid Android, and they've got Stephen Fry, who is really one of the great narrators of our time, doing the voice of the guide itself. I could have done with a lot more of the guide, I have to say. So this is Marvin the Paranoid Android escorting his inmates aboard the Heart of Gold. Of course, Alan isn't inside Marvin, that's somebody else, Alan is just doing the voice, but on radio, you just get Alan.
Ah. I think that door just sighed.
Ghastly, isn't it? All the doors in this spaceship have been programmed to have a cheerful and sunny disposition. Anyway, come on. I've been ordered to take you up to the bridge. Ah, please yourselves. Here I am, brain the size of a planet, and they ask me to take you up to the bridge. Call that job satisfaction, because I don't. You can thank the Sirius Cybernetics Corporation for building robots with GPP.
What's GPP?
Genuine people personalities. I'm a personality prototype. You can tell, can't you?
Now, on the radio, most of Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy was like that. And I was a big fan of the radio series. But funnily enough, the medium which I liked it almost the best was were the books. I know a lot of people are very down on the books. I thought the third book, Life, the Universe and Everything, which is the story of the Cricket Wars, which was originally drummed up incidentally as an episode for Doctor Who, as a series for Doctor Who, I thought was actually the best one. Now, one of the problems that they had attempting to put Hitchhikers up on the screen, and something that Douglas Adams himself apparently wrestled with when he was going through the various versions of the screenplay. He now receives a posthumous screenwriting and production credits. I mean, clearly, it is still his baby. And according to the way it's been sold to us by the filmmakers, although there is another screenwriter on board, they have basically just done some fixes on what was essentially Douglas Adams' script. So what they want us to think, and it may be the case, is that this is essentially the thing that Adams came up with. But Adams himself worried that it might be unfilmable. And his problem was, as far as I know, that he was worried about whether that something that wordy, whether something that was that much based on diversions would actually translate into a two-hour movie, or in this case, slightly less than 2 hours. And I have to say that I think it doesn't, for exactly the reasons that Adams was worried about. Now, firstly, on the positive side, Martin Freeman is great. It's a great bit of casting as Arthur Dent. As you know, I'd never seen The Office, but he's terrific. He's downbeat. He wears that dressing gown with shabby aplomb. He has exactly the right fed-up, long, dark tea time of the soul manner that Arthur Dent, or Dent Arthur Dent, as of course Slarty Bartfast refers to him, should have. Slarty Bartfast is played by Bill Nighy, again another brilliant bit of casting, because Bill Nighy was clearly born to play the role of the field fancying Slarty Bartfast, and he does that absolutely brilliantly. And of course Stephen Fry, who I said is a great narrator, does marvellously as the book. However, there is nothing like enough of the book. In the radio series, in the television series, the novels or the rest of it, the book would interrupt all the time. In fact, there would almost be entire episodes in which it was nothing but the book burbling.
Voiced by Peter Jones.
Yes, exactly. And you'd get these wonderful on-screen graphics that were very cronky, but they were very, very funny. And really, what you realised was that the narrative was never the point. I mean, the story of Hitchhiker's Guide, the story of the Cricket Wars, is the first moment that Hitchhiker's Guide actually really starts to hang together. But the first two, Hitchhiker's Guide, Restaurant at the End of the Universe, which I think there is a setup here for Restaurant at the End of the Universe to happen next, weren't really plot-driven. They were more driven by the fact that Arthur Dent, like Adams himself, would just constantly, you know, drifted off into wondering about other things, like how to make a cup of tea. I mean, there's a wonderful moment in the original in which they almost, Eddie the shipboard computer crashes because Arthur has spent half an hour explaining to him how to make a cup of tea, and Eddie is attempting to get his head round this. You don't get any of that in the film. What you do get is truncated versions of all the lines that the old fans know. So the best example about it is this. When they arrive first on the Vogon battleship or the Vogon destroyer, Arthur Dent gets a fish put into his ear, and the fish is the Babel fish. And this happens in the film. He gets a fish put into his ear, and the Babel fish translates all foreign languages into a language that Arthur Dent can explain. Now, in the movie, we get this, and it's explained that this is how people can understand each other in outer space. What we don't get is, in fact, the real punchline of that gag, which is that the Babel fish is then used by an author whose name now fails me, it's like Frulig, to prove the non-existence of God. And the argument is, God says, I refuse to prove myself because without faith I'm nothing. And then man says, but what about the Babel fish? I mean, that couldn't have happened by accident. It's a dead giveaway. Clearly, if such a thing as a Babel fish exists, it proves you exist. And therefore, by your own logic, you don't. Oops, says God, I hadn't thought of that. Probably disappears in a puff of logic. That was easy, says man, who then goes on to prove that black is white and gets killed on a zebra crossing.
Do you know now, the whole book off
no,
my heart?
But what
at this point, we should move on?
No, but what I'm saying is, in a way, those sort of rococo sort of wombles afterwards were the point. The point wasn't
a rococo womble.
Yeah, you know, it's curly and it's ornamental and it's not the narrative, but it's the stuff around it. It's ornate. It's to do with the embroidering. And it's the devil is in the detail. For me, if you take that detail away, I'm just sitting there going, where's the gag about the guy using the Babelfish as the central argument for his best-selling book, Well, That Just About Wraps It Up for God? Where is all the stuff about Ford Prefect, who here is played by Mos Def, who I think, you know, does the job as best he can, but fundamentally it's a weird bit of casting. Obviously, from the audience's point of view, it's great, because, you know, that's fine. It theoretically opens up the American demographic. But the gag with Ford Prefect is meant to be that Arthur Dent thinks Ford Prefect comes from Guildford. And when Mos Def said, I don't really come from Guildford, you go, no, of course you don't. You're Mos Def. I mean, you know, excuse me for figuring that out a little while ago. Nor do you get the explanation that Ford Prefect is called Ford Prefect because he skimped on his research and he thought it was a popular name that would nicely blend in, like Ford Anglia or Ford Capri, while we're on that subject. Now, what that does for me is it takes the heart out of the piece. However, I am very aware that people who had no preconceptions about Hitchhiker's Guide, who basically are the people are going to go and see Star Wars, and what they're seeing is Star Wars with jokes, do enjoy it. And so it is entirely possible that Garth Jennings and, you know, Hammer and Tongs partnership have correctly identified the key audience for the film, which is hitchhiking virgins. But personally, I think if you're somebody who knew and loved and spent time with the book, the radio play, the towel, you are going to spend a lot of it going, and that's what I did. And that was a real problem for me. So for me, it doesn't work. I am fully willing to accept that there are others who will enjoy it. But I was left feeling a hole, wondering why me and the bowl of petunias had that strange feeling of, oh no, not again.
And a number of other people wanting to join in on this. This is Danny and Carlisle. The Hitchhiker's books, first three anyway, made me cry with laughter. Saw the film last night and only laughed twice, quietly. Very disappointing, Danny and Carlisle. And Steve of the M6, Mark says there's nothing scary in Clifford. Oh, we're back on Clifford the Big Red Dog. If I saw a giant talking red dog coming toward me, frankly, I'd be absolutely petrified. More on this in just a moment. It's a fair point, though, really. If you have a 60-foot dog, it's not going to be anything other than extremely scary. It should have an 18 certificate.
Okay.
Let's do some...
I'm just worrying about it now, because now I'm just worrying that there's the course, you know, I have forgotten the axe murdering sequence. And
I'll just say, I think about it. My favourite bit in the first Hitchhiker's book is the whale in the bowl of petunias, which makes it into the movie, so I forgive it for that.
It does make it into the movie, and they do the whale talking as the whale discovers language on his fall towards the planet and says, oh, what's this big thing coming up to me? It's big and round. It needs a round, like ground. I hope it's going to be friendly. That's one of the best moments in the film. Would that the rest of the film had been like that.
Let's take some travel. Here's Deborah, 347.
Delays on the M62 through West Yorkshire, westbound between junction 29 and 27, Tingley and Gildersham, after a jackknife lorry. M3 in Surrey, northbound, queuing traffic. Two lanes are blocked off between junction 3 at Lightwater and the M25 interchange following an accident. A55 Isle of Anglesey, the Menai Bridge is blocked eastbound after an accident, and delays for the M40 through Oxfordshire, one lane blocked northbound at junction 10 after a breakdown. In Bedfordshire on the M1, the northbound exit slip road, it's closed off at junction 13 at Milton Keynes South because of the accident on the A41 in Bedfordshire, which is still blocked at the Salford turning to the east of Bletchley after an accident. And the A30 in Cornwall blocked westbound at the A30 junction south of Launceston because of an accident. Deborah Langerman, 5 Live Travel.
It takes the right team to cut through the jargon. There are different parts of the tetrahydrocannabol or whatever the constituent chemical is.
We are way beyond the boundaries of my knowledge.
Debate the facts. Is 0-0 away a good result for Liverpool? What's your analysis?
It's just very interesting to look at the stats this season. Liverpool are so lightweight away from home in the Premier League.
And ask the big questions.
Is part of the problem that this all requires too much human change and humans aren't prepared to do it?
The only real way you're going to make an impact on climate change is by international agreement.
That team, 5 Live Breakfast. Weekday mornings from 6. 5 Live.
And if you're one of the people asking the question, does Mark ever breathe? The answer is, like the goats of Greek antiquity, yes, but through his ears. Hence the last review. Andy in Shefford, I saw that dreary Interpreter movie, and then I saw The Assassination of Richard Nixon, both with Sean Penn. It's like watching two different actors. The only conclusion I can draw is, if Sean Penn couldn't make The Interpreter good, then it must have been a really, really awful script. Give it a wide berth and see him do it right in The Assassination.
I have to say, much as I wanted to love the assassination of Richard Nixon, I wasn't crazy about that either. It's a movie which has got an awful lot of independent spirit behind it, but not an awful lot of following through on the screen, I think.
If we're not going to see Hitchhikers, and we might sort of think about Clifford's Big Red Movie, what else should we
do? Why not take the kids to see XXX2, because that's now gone down to a 12A rating. According to the BBFC website, the British Board of Film Classification website is a wonderful thing. If you've never logged onto it, I advise that you do, because it tells you everything you need to know about movies. During post-production, the distributor sought and was given advice on how to secure a 12A classification. Following this advice, a sequence was taken out, and then it was submitted for past 12A with no cuts. Now, I have to say, it's an awful lot of action, adventure, and smashing, and blowing, and explosions for a 12A certificate movie. Marvellously, in the press notes for XXX2, it says, in refashioning and freshening the concept, we set our sights on a new XXX agent for this second adventure. No, that's not actually what happened. As far as I understand what happened, but obviously for legal reasons, this is just what I understand happened. You know, in the original movie, XXX, it's your man Vin Diesel there. And apparently the negotiations went something like, how much do you want for the next movie? I'd like 30 million. Ah, Ice Cube, how are you busy? And at the end of XXX2, we end up with Samuel Jackson saying, for the next one, we're going to get somebody else, and I've got the perfect guy in mind. So, we've now established that the XXX franchise is going to have a different XXXer every movie. And this is brilliant from the production point of view, because it means nobody can demand a big salary, because they're all first-timers. You have to see it from the producer's point of view. That's a really smart
move. Doctor Who, they can put anyone they want in.
They can put anyone they want in, but with this you change it every single movie, so you're not going to get... It's like having George Lazenby every single time. It's the first and the last time you can do it. It doesn't matter how bad a mood they're in at the end of the film. Who cares? So XXX2, Ice Cube. Now, Ice Cube, little podgy. Just a little. But, you know, he's not...
Nothing wrong with that.
No, perfectly fine. I mean, I can't criticise because he's less podgy than I am. But at the beginning of the movie, basically the XXX organisation is overrun by some weird sort of inside group. And there's a horse farm, and then everything's happening under the ground, and then they all have to come out of the ground because there's an attack. Anyway, next thing you know, Samuel Jackson has got to go completely undercover and discover who's done this. He has to break out of prison, the new XXX2, played by Ice Cube. There's a breakout sequence which involves Ice Cube running up to the top of the prison, throwing himself off at exactly 3:30, and a helicopter coming down and picking him up as he goes. And that's pretty much the tone of the movie. And he just grabs the helicopter, goes past and says, you're late. And then he has, all the way through the film, that expression of sour, mean, edgy, grumpy, you know, and that's what he does. And things go bang, things go boom. Things go whoosh. There's a lot of urban stuff going on, because it turns out that in order to overthrow a plot which is basically aimed at the White House, it's a coup d'etat. Our XXX hero has to hang out with a bunch of guys with really big cars that stand up on the wheels whilst quoting Tupac Shakur.
That's and the urban stuff going
exactly.
on.
Exactly. And at one very important moment, the president himself actually ends up quoting. There's a lot of stuff about Tupac Shakur. And there's a lot of stuff with things going bang, boom, crash, wallop. There's a lot of absolutely ridiculous hardball dialogue. It is total nonsense. It's pretty badly done on some levels. It's directed by Lee Tamahori, and at certain points, the point, for example, in which Ice Cube is chasing a train in a car, and the car, in order to chase the train, jumps off the road onto the train track, blows out its wheels, and therefore becomes a train, and then chases the train at 200 and blah, 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 miles an hour, is really silly, and it's done with computer graphics. But hey, you don't go and see XXX2 for anything vaguely resembling sense. You go and see it for things blowing up.
It sounds like it's a kindred spirit to something like Van Helsing, which is...
Dumber than Van Helsing.
It's dumber than Van Helsing.
Yeah, it is, Because the thing with Van Helsing actually has something vaguely resembling a story, and although Van Helsing does actually end up with people wearing leather and strapping things on... You know, there is...
Is that good?
Yeah, it is good.
In what way is that good?
Because it's, you know, it's eye candy, isn't it? Okay. Look, there is an exploitation movie ethic which people are very down on, but there's no reason to be down on that. People go to the movies, you know, for different reasons. You don't go to XXX2 in order to see something that makes any sense. You go to see... You know, Ice Cube jumping off the roof of a prison and catching a helicopter and then eating a bunch of French fries. And it's rubbish, but it's perfectly passable rubbish. It's under 90 minutes long. It's stupid. It'll be in one ear and out the other, and they'll get somebody in for the next one, and
well, apparently it's Vin Diesel back for the third one.
Is it?
Apparently, so I'm told.
Well, at the end of XXX2, that it's called the various titles, but over here it's called XXX2, The Next Level, Sam Jackson says... We got to, for the next one, we got to go, we got to raise the bar. We got to get someone even more wild, even more crazy, even further out of the box.
Oh, it was him again.
And no, in fact, it can't be Vin Diesel, because Vin Diesel, we hear somebody says, oh, he got killed. Although actually they could always get round there, but somebody says at the beginning of Triple X, oh yeah, incidentally he got
killed. What people are saying? No. You don't care. Catriona says on the subject of Hitchhikers, Alan Rickman has the sexiest voice ever. You're probably right, actually. I was not planning to see Hitchhikers, but will now that I know he's in it. As you said, he's not actually in it, just hear his voice. Yeah. Matthew Eggleston in Hartlepool. Ulan Clufid
was
the author of the book, and that about wraps it up for God, that Mark could not remember.
Yeah.
Love the radio series to death. Apprehensive about seeing the film.
He's the author of three volumes, isn't it? Who is this God person anyway? 10 Places Where God Went Wrong, and then something else.
And that about wraps it up for God. And also out this week.
Two nice sort of changes. One of them, very quickly, In Your Hands, which is the latest movie to be shot under the Dogme 95 manifesto, with which you are probably familiar anyway.
I was reading it just last night.
Just in case you aren't. It's
quoting from it.
The Dogme Vow of Chastity, which was dreamed up by Lars von Trier and his cohorts, which includes things like shooting must be done on location, the sound must never be produced apart from the images, the camera must be handheld, the film must be in colour, optical work is forbidden, no music, genre movies are not acceptable, and the director must not be credited. Now, these rules were dreamed up as a gag, but it's funny that they have produced such unfunny movies. I mean, starting, for example, with Idioturn, The Idiots, the Lars von Trier movie, which is awful, and things like Festen, the Vinterberg movie. Anyway, now, In Your Hands, which is an absolutely grief-stricken story about a female priest who becomes pregnant, who goes into a women's hospital, where she meets somebody who has a terrible history, and then terrible things start happening to her, and then she has a crisis of faith, and then there's more anguishing, and then they go and see the doctor, and then it gets worse, and then there's more anguishing, and then it ends.
Does it make you want to go and see Clifford the Big Red Doll?
It really made me think, you know, guys, joke over. Come on. I mean, how much angst can we have? And that's enough angst. But on the independent movie front, and I think probably film of the week, although clearly Hitchhiker's Guide is going to be the one that wipes the floor in terms of the box office, is this peculiar thing, Mean Creek. Now, Mean Creek is an independent movie that comes brandishing a brace of awards like the Sundance Humanitas Award and the John Cassavetes Independent Spirit Award. Now, to be
honest,
you've
never heard of then?
Well, awards that people who are into independent film have heard of. And generally, whenever I see a movie coming at me with loads of worthy independent awards, my toes start to curl. I think, oh, here we go, 90 minutes of earnest worthiness. But the story of Mean Creek, which is very much inspired by things like River's Edge, Stand By Me, The Outsiders, perhaps Larry Clark's Bully, it's a story of a group of kids and an outsider kid, and the outsider kid is lunky and strange and weird, and he's bullying the youngest kid, who's played by Rory Culkin. That's the youngest of the Culkin kids. I think there are seven of them, and they decide to take their revenge on him.
Okay, I think I got one. Tie him to a tree, pour some honey on his face, and leave him there all day and night.
Why?
So the bugs, they get on him and bite him.
No, we can't do that.
Why not?
Well, what if a bear came?
Shut up.
You know, if we hurt him, we'd be just as bad as him.
We need to hurt him without really hurting him.
I mean, if you can think of something like that, then...
Then what?
I don't know.
All right, Heather Locklear or Shannon Doherty?
Don't know who Heather Locklear is.
You don't? Dude!
Now, this is the point at which you're going to tell me that you don't know who Heather Locklear is either.
Oh, well, I've heard you go on about her.
No, I don't go on about her. You know who Heather Locklear is?
Yeah.
Okay, fine. Do you, or are you just sort of humouring me?
Yeah.
She was a star of Swamp Thing 2. You see, suddenly it all comes flooding back.
I was so busy thinking about Lars von Trier and angst.
And angst, that yes.
It just slipped my mind for a moment.
Well, now the thing with Mean Creek is, what happens is they go out on a boating trip. They're going to take this revenge on this kid, obviously, as you can tell from the poster, which incidentally features a hand lying on the floor, apparently in a rigor mortis fashion. Something goes terribly wrong, and the kids are then brought to a sort of coming-of-age moment. Now, it's a very old story. It's been done to death. Funnily enough, the publicity says that it's a cross between Lord of the Flies and Deliverance. I don't think those are actually very good reference points for it. I think the best reference point for it is Stand By Me, which you'll remember is the story of a bunch of boys going along a train line in order to go and see a body, based on an experience which really did happen to Stephen King, based on his short story, and certainly the body. The nice thing about Mean Creek is it takes a fairly formulaic idea. It shoots it with an intimacy which to some extent recalls the intimacy of Larry Clark, but without all that leery intrusiveness, which I really don't like at all. It gets very good performances out of its young cast. Rory Culkin is perfectly fine, and it does have moments of real melancholic tragedy.
Movie of the week?
Well, I would say Mean Creek.
Okay. Phil says, if Clifford leaves home because he is worried that he cost the family too much
it's
in
food... It's a peril,
because
yeah.
he is so big, and because he's so big, yeah. he doesn't get love. Doesn't that send the message that kids shouldn't love their pets? That has to be the dark side to the film.
There's a dark side to absolutely everything, but I think the dark side definitely to that movie is certainly the scene of the chainsaw disemboweling.
Antonia Cavalier from Surbiton had the right answer to our Ridley Scott question, which was Gladiator.
Oh.
Antonia, well done. Have a good weekend. We're back on Tuesday.
Thought it was Carry On Clear.
No, told you.
He worked on that, though.
Live news, live sport.
This is BBC Radio 5 Live.